We talk a bit more frankly about mental health issues than we used to. There is still a stigma often attached to diseases of the mind that is not present in talking about most diseases of the body. But the Affordable Care Act and changing health insurance and who gets it put care of the mind on a more or less equal footing in care of the body. There is a big question, though, about who will provide that care in the future. Research indicates some potential shortages of people to provide mental health care, or as people in the business call it, behavioral health. Two guests join us. Janet Kaufman is an associate professor at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, Institute for Health Policy Studies. She led a study of California's behavioral health workforce, and she joins us by phone. Thanks for joining us, Janet.
Thank you very much. Happy to be with you today.
Good to have you. Jonathan Betlinsky joins us in person. He's a psychiatrist and the president of the Oregon Psychiatric Physicians Association. Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
And thanks for the invite.
So an easy first question, why do we now call this behavioral health rather than mental health?
I think in part because the easiest way to tell that a person is having a challenge with the way their brain functions is by looking at the way they behave. And so we switched to behavioral health because that's the part that we can see and that we can monitor more easily.
That's what you're going to work on is what's in front of you.
Okay. Right.
Are the ratios generally similar place to place? I mean, do you expect to have X number of behavioral health care workers per capita?
Actually, no. A full 50% of counties in our country don't have any mental health workers at all. And about 77% of them are underserved.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So Janet, you studied California. Give us a sense of the numbers that you looked at.
Okay. Well, so what I would say is, yes, we have a lot of areas of California that have shortages of behavioral health professionals. And I would say the Jefferson area is particularly underserved when it comes to psychiatrists and psychologists. Your ratios of psychiatrists and doctorally prepared psychologists per population are about half the statewide average. But when we look at data on need for behavioral health services, needs are as great, if not greater, than the rest of the state, particularly in the area of substance abuse.
Well, that's a major question then, because it seems like as I look at the maps that are included with your research, which is a very thorough report called California's Current and Future Behavioral Health Workforce. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the people who are practicing and the places to train them are certainly clustered around the big cities. But certainly from what we've learned, particularly with substance abuse issues in recent years, is it seems like you need behavioral health people in the countryside, far away from the cities.
Well, yeah, you need behavioral people everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And again, in your part of the state, is the part of the state that on the substance abuse side has some of the highest rates of opioid use. So that's particularly important. And not every, I should say, one reason I think in our report we make a big point about availability of psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners is, while in substance abuse we've made a lot of effort to make that available in primary care, there's always a need, I think, for access to prescribers, in particular for those folks who are severely mentally ill. I'm thinking schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, where we know the medications make a very large, impact on folks' ability to function. That's a particular concern to us, not only the dearth currently, but that workforce is aging more rapidly than the rest of the behavioral health workforce. And it's not at all clear that we have enough new psychiatrists, new psychiatric nurse practitioners being trained to take the place of those folks who are retiring.
And Jonathan Betlinsky, that particular category is most important because, again, these are people who have prescribing powers and privileges.
Yeah, psychiatrists, at least in most states in our country, are the mental health professionals who do or who have the license to prescribe medications. Mental health nurse practitioners can do so as well, and physician's assistants. Psychologists do not, with the exception of a handful of places.
But let's look at the whole landscape, though, Janet, because you were looking beyond just psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners. I mean, right down to, we're talking licensed clinical social workers. I mean, pretty much everybody who does anything in behavioral health, it sounds like.
Right. Yes. And I would say that, compared at least to the rest of the state, the Jefferson area, has rather typical supplies of licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed clinical social workers, But then as we did our projections for the future, even in those groups where you have an adequate supply now, we're projecting a statewide shortage because we just don't see the growth of new entrants being fast enough to offset retirements. You know, and I just would say also for licensed clinical social workers, there's a second dimension, which is that there are many people who become a licensed clinical social worker but aren't necessarily working in a behavioral health system. Behavioral health setting. They may be working in, you know, children's services, foster care.
I was about to say foster care, yeah.
Tremendously important. But you also find a lot of licensed clinical social workers working in hospitals around, say, discharge planning, working in hospices to help families make decisions. Tremendously important work, but it's not right in what we would think of as the behavioral health system space.
So the general trend, even outside of the part of California that we serve, the whole state, it looks like there's a sort of a downward trend in providers?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, how about on the Oregon side, Jonathan Bitlinski? How well do you track the numbers on this side?
Well, in Oregon, we have about 750 psychiatrists who are licensed to practice in the state. But about 150 of those live out of state. And a big chunk of the ones that live in state are retired or no longer practicing or no longer practicing full time. And that would include people, that number also includes people who are licensed but working in entirely administrative positions. So the numbers here are not any better. And Oregon in some ways has a much higher need. We have a higher percentage of a population that has an identified behavioral health or addictions challenge.
Well, in your case, for example, and as president of the Oregon Psychiatric Physicians Association, which I'm sure involves some administrative duties, you also work at OHSU. I mean, do you get to do much clinical work yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing about half time these days, most weeks, and that's by choice. There's certainly enough administrative responsibilities that I wouldn't have to.
So particularly with psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners, is the length of time in schooling one of the major issues?
I think so. When you sit down and do the math to become a psychiatrist, it takes 12 years. To become a mental health nurse practitioner, it varies a little bit from the program, but you're looking at here in Oregon, a four-year nursing degree plus doctoral training after that. There are ways to be able to get out into the workforce much quicker in ways that are similarly remunerative financially.
Like what?
In other words, you can make just as much money doing things that are not healthcare related, but have a much shorter path.
Okay, that was the question. Wow. We're talking health. Go ahead, Janet.
And I think that the other point there is, let's say you're someone, let's just stick with psychiatry for a moment, you're someone who has an interest in becoming a physician. Well, with a psychiatrist, you will have, you know, one more year of training as someone who's a family physician. If you want to subspecialize, say, in child and adolescent psychiatry, where there's a tremendous need, two more years. Yet, as a psychiatrist, your earnings will not probably be that much higher than, say, a family physician general internist. And they're going to be substantially lower than someone who's gone on to a procedure-based specialty.
Say like a something. Surgeon?
Yeah, like a surgeon or even, say, an interventional cardiologist or a gastroenterologist who specializes in doing things like colonoscopy. You know, we have a reimbursement system in much of the country that's driven by fee-for-service and driven by procedures. So even if you have that passion to serve, you might choose a different medical specialty, or you might look and say, hey, I have a calling to be in behavioral health, but do I really want to invest that 12 years when I could get a master's degree in social work and be a licensed clinical social worker, get my master's degree in counseling psychology and become a licensed marriage and family therapist? I think some people, especially people coming maybe from a more disadvantaged socioeconomic background, it's a calculation that I think some folks make. Understandably, to say I'm going to pursue something at the master's level rather than need to get an MD and then residency.
And in which case, we're talking about half the time spent in college. Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about shortages of mental health professionals in Oregon and in California with Jonathan Bitlinski, the president of the Oregon Psychiatric Physicians Association, Janet Kaufman from the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Janet, just to restate, we're talking about shortages looming in all areas of behavioral health. Is that right?
Yes, I would say so. Mm-hmm.
And so how do we address this? I mean, what kinds of incentives put in place, particularly in a state as large as California, where there are lots of people and apparently will continue to be for a while?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some of the things that we talk about in our report is expanding training capacity. And I think if you've seen the maps, as you mentioned in our report, you'll notice that there are no psychiatric residency programs north of Sacramento. There are no psychiatric nurse practitioner training programs north of San Francisco. So just expanding capacity. And what's interesting, I think, to note on the expanded capacity is out of Cal State Chico, you know, there is a program to train more licensed clinical social workers using what they call a distributed education model. So the idea is instead of having everybody go to Chico for 2 years to do their licensed clinical social work, their master's in social work, you do some things there, but you do a lot of your clinical training and supervision out in your own community, so that it's a program that's, I think, really been helpful in getting licensed social workers in the Jefferson area, particularly more rural communities. So some way of thinking, how can we do more training statewide, but especially in the Jefferson area? And then secondly, I think once folks are trained, increasing the incentives for them to practice in our underserved parts of the state. We do have some loan repayment, some stipend options, and so these are particularly the way loan repayment works. For example, as you finished your residency in psychiatry, let's say you finished your whatever your psych nurse practitioner, licensed clinical social worker, and you agree to practice in an underserved area. Often it could be in a community health center, it could be in a public mental health clinic, for usually typically 2 years in exchange for loan repayment, getting your student loans repaid. And so it gives you a way, you know, it gives you sort of financial incentive to get some of your debt cleared up, which is high, especially in medical school. And I think, you know, some of the folks who use that are folks who are interested in a rural area anyway, and it kind of gives them that added ability to say, okay, I'm going to do what I really want to do, not feel pressed to take a better paying job in the city. And then with some folks, they actually get out to a place they may not have thought of going, and it becomes a good fit for them. So I think that's, I would say, expanding educational capacity and by scholarship and loan repayment are two of the most important things. I think the third is rethinking sort of the way we deliver some care, and particularly, and I think we're doing this already, but we could do more, which is to say, let's recognize that it's probably not realistic to have a psychiatrist in every community,
mm-hmm.
but we now have telecommunications technology where we don't necessarily have to have a psychiatrist physically in every community, but we can have psychiatrists available to us virtually. And so, you know, a telepsychiatry models mm-hmm. have been tested for many years. I think have been proven, you know, to be effective. And then there are also models. UC Davis and UC Irvine has one of these of what they call a primary care psychiatry fellowship. And that's a one-year fellowship. Again, the distributed education model. You don't have to go to Irvine or Davis to do everything. You do, you know, a couple mm-hmm. weekends there, and then the rest of it is video conference to really help primary care physicians be better prepared to care for folks with behavioral health needs.
So I want to bring Jonathan Belinsky back in because about incentives on the Oregon side, whether there are programs like what Janet's talking about too.
Yeah, Oregon takes a few different approaches. First, if you're a physician in Oregon and you practice in a rural area, you get a bit of a tax break, which is nice. So that offers incentive to move out into rural communities. If you look at a training level, OHSU has a community psychiatry program, has for a long time, and so that helps build relationships between our trainees and rural communities. And helps get some workforce out there. OHSU and the training program at Good Samaritan and Corvallis both have telepsychiatry components as well, trying to get folks in, comfortable with that. The state of Oregon has dedicated funds for several years now to the Oregon Psychiatric Access Line for Kids. So that's a phone number that pediatricians and family practice folks can call in and speak with a child psychiatrist right away about their patients. The legislature just set aside $900,000 to expand that so that primary care providers for patients of all ages can call in and speak with a psychiatrist and get help. We're pushing models here in Oregon like the ECHO model, which is a model out of the University of New Mexico that supports primary care providers and helps increase their level of expertise. The Oregon Psychiatric Physicians Association last year hosted a training conference training psychiatrists to collaborate with primary care providers. We can be much more effective. If 70% of psychiatric prescribing is done by primary care providers anyway, then it makes more sense for us to support them and help them be able to do that excellently than to try to set up shop and take care of everybody ourselves.
Are more people seeking out behavioral health services with the Affordable Care Act's equality of with physical health services?
Absolutely. So prior to the Affordable Care Act and a piece of legislation that passed just before that that required parity, that required insurance companies that provide physical health care cover behavioral health care to the same level. There just weren't as many people seeking services. There were as many people that needed services, but nobody had the ability to pay for them. And that resulted in a trend in psychiatrists. About 40% nationally of psychiatrists do cash pay only business. You have to pay them to get care. Now that insurance companies cover behavioral health care, there's a huge a massive increase in the number of folks seeking services, but the health system hasn't been able to evolve rapidly enough to meet that need.
So, Janet, down to our last minute, that's a lot of work ahead of us to be able to deal with all the new people seeking services and be able to beef up the ranks of the workforce to help them.
Right. Well, and just to reemphasize one point that we do in California, too, have the challenge of a fair number of psychiatrists who are not seeing folks with insurance. So I think this is a big challenge going forward. Is we've made great strides both in Oregon and California to expanding the number of folks who have health insurance, and parity has helped us even more, but we still need more providers willing to care for folks with insurance.
All right. We were it'll be a few more years. We're still working on this. Absolutely. Janet Kaufman, Associate Professor at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine Institute for Health Policy Studies, the chief author of California's Current and Future Behavioral Health Workforce. Jonathan Betlinski at OHSU is the psychiatrist and president of the Oregon Psychiatric Physicians Association. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks.